Now, we have to to answer this, I'll first make that point that japa is meditation. And chanting, especially loud chanting, sankirtan, is a distribution. Meditation is meant for individual's development. Whereas sankirtan is an act of benevolence, helping others, a kind of a no consideration for one's own spiritual benefit. Now, now let us consider the relationships are of five kinds. Positive relationships are of five categories. They're known as five types of rasas. Neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental, and conjugal. Now these relationships are originally coming from this, from our relationship with Krishna. Because whatever is there in the material nature is a reflection of the spiritual reality. So these relationships are that we develop around us in the material nature is actually originating from our relationship with Krishna. Now, meditation and individual their benefit is in shantarash or neutrality. But servitorship and beyond that, friendship, parental and conjugal, these relationships are an expression of love. You see the difference? Like in shantarash, there is, you see, no expression of that love. Love is there. It is more of reverence and respect. It is not really a kind of developed or manifested love. Because whenever there is love, there is activity. There is an expression. Now those expressions are manifested in the form of, initially in the form of servitorship. Then it becomes, when it is even more intensified or more developed, then it is friendship. When it is further developed, it is parental. And then ultimately it is conjugal. That's why now we can see the link. Like when you're chanting silently, meditating on the, just meditation, love is not manifested. And then again, you see the love is also of two kinds. Love out of reverence and love out of love. Like where reverence disappears or reverence becomes subdued and just love becomes the prime consideration. So in servitorship that awareness is there, the greatness of the Lord. He is great and He is the supreme. And we are his subordinate servants. Now, that relationship again is in this. Now, spiritual sky also has two regions. One is Vaikuntha and the other is Braj, Vrindavan, Golok. You see, in Vaikuntha, that awareness is there, that God is God. And that's why, you see, everyone there serves Him in the mood of servitorship. He is the Supreme Lord, and we are His subordinate servants. So Vaikuntha therefore has these two mellows. These two mellows, Shanta and Dasya, are there in Vaikuntha. The other three mellows, friendship, parental and conjugal, are not present there. Because when you have, you see, friendship takes place between the equals. Now, who can become equal to God? Therefore, that relationship is not possible there. Now, at least in friendship, friendship takes place between equals. But parental, the parents are superior and the Lord becomes subordinate. The devotees become superior and God has become inferior. Now, how is that possible when that awareness that God is there? And the conjugal, just a loving relationship between a young boy and a young girl. Like how that kind of relationship is possible with the Lord. Now that's why these three relationships are manifested in one area, a very special area. And the speciality of that area, in that area, God is not God. Meaning, it's not that He ceases to be God, but those who are surrounding Him, the devotees, to them it is not important that He is God. In a simple sense it can be said that it is not possible for a living entity to become equal to God or superior to God. But God can become inferior or superior, subordinate or equal to them. Now, in order for that to happen, that one has to forget that God is God. That's why that arrangement has been made by Yogamaya. Now see the term, Maya means illusion. And Yoga is to connect, to unite. Now, in order to unite with the Lord, a special arrangement has been created where the devotee is put into illusion. But again, illusion or forgetfulness can be of two kinds. One kind of forgetfulness is out of ignorance, and the other kind of forgetfulness is out of love. In intense love, one forgets the position of the other person. Now that's opposite. It's not the same kind of ignorance that is out of it. Same kind of forgetfulness that's out of ignorance. Now Vrindavan is that region where the devotees have forgotten that Krishna is Krishna because of their love for Him. And the explanation for that, or example for that, is that how out of intense love one can forget the other person's position. Like, the son may have become the state president, but the mother, not that the mother doesn't know that her son is a state president, but to the mother it doesn't matter that he is a state president. Why? Because of her loving relationship. To her, what is important is that he is her son. State presidency is of a secondary consideration. So similarly in Vrindavan, the devotees out of their intense love for Krishna have forgotten that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's why they can develop this relationship. Now, see, this relationship can be developed only out of love, only out of intense love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that love can be achieved only through Sankirtan. Now maybe this also, now the question may arise, why only out of Sankirtan? Okay, let's get into that also. Bhakti or devotion to the Lord are of two kinds. One is following the rules and regulations of the scriptures, which is called Vaidhi Bhakti. And the other is called Raganuga Bhakti, or following the love of the heart. Now, Raganuga means, Anuga means to follow, following. So the vaidhi bhakti, following the rules and regulations of the scriptures, one can end up only in Vrindavan, only in Vaikuntha. Because that is the thing, like, you know, out of following the rules and regulations, when you achieve the perfection, the awareness of the Supreme Personality of God, His supreme position is so predominant that, you know, that will automatically prevail. That thought or that understanding will prevail. Therefore, Vaidhi Bhakti leads to Vaikuntha. But Raganuga Bhakti is the other kind of bhakti. Raganuga, rag means, Raganuga literally means following the Ragatmika Bhaktas. Ragatmika means those who have intense love for Krishna. The intense, perfected spiritual love for Krishna, they are known as Ragatmika Bhaktas. So they are the devotees of Vrindavan. The devotees in spiritual Vrindavan, they are all Ragatmika Bhaktas. So when one follows the Ragatmika Bhakta, then he develops Raganuga Bhakti. Now, again, this can be explained in this way. You see, love cannot be imagined, love cannot be imitated. You know, love has to develop on its own. You know, you cannot learn how to love in school, right? I mean, there are so many subjects that are being discussed in the universities and educational institutions. But this is one topic which is, although which is most important topic in the world, but on this topic there is no educational. I mean, one cannot teach somebody how to love, right? But again, we can learn how to love by seeing how others are loving others. Therefore, the way to learn how to love Krishna is by following those who love Krishna. And now, when we are, now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now we are faced with one complexity, one problem. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be approached through Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti is the only way by which we can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Bidhing Bina Vaikantiki Harer Bhaktir Utpatayiva Kalpate. Rupa Goswami is saying that in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that if one disregards the injunctions or tenets of Shruti, means the Vedas, Smritis, the Upanishads, Purans, and Pancharatra Vidhi, if one tries to approach the Supreme, if one develops or if one displays sincere and earnest Vaikantiki Harir Bhakti. Vaikantiki means earnest. Right? Very earnest, sincere devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead will simply create a disturbance. Utpatayiva kalpate. So that is indicating that devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be performed following Vaidhi Bhakti. Now, see, the thing is that Supreme Personality of Godhead must be served through Vaidhi Bhakti. But through Vaidhi Bhakti you can end up only in Vaikuntha. And only through Raganuga Bhakti you can enter into Vrindavan. So then what to do? So Krishna actually solved that problem. He himself considered that. After revealing his Vrindavan pastimes, he considered, how will anybody ever come to Vrindavan? I reveal my Vraja Leela, but how will anybody ever come to Vrindavan? That's why Krishna decided to appear as a devotee. You see, when Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is served through Vaidhi Bhakti, he enters into Vaikuntha. But when the devotee Supreme Personality of Godhead is served with Vaidhi Bhakti, the gateway to Vrindavan opens up. Through Vaidhi Bhakti, you are not serving the Supreme Lord, you are serving the devotee Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now you can see, who is this devotee? This devotee is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani, which means he is Radharani herself. So when you are following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who you are following? Srimati Radharani. So Anuga, following the resident of Vrindavan, you develop Raganuga Bhakti. Now when you are following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Srimati Radharani herself, who are you following? The best devotee in Vrindavan. Therefore, see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is served through Sankirtan. The scripture, Vaidhi Bhakti, Vaidhi means the injunctions of the scriptures. Now what is the scripture is saying? How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this personality of Godhead who came as a devotee, who should be served? Jagai Sankirtana Prayaj. He should be served, Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, through Sankirtan Yajna. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he comes as a devotee, the way to serve him is Sankirtan. So that is the Vaidhi Bhakti. So by doing that, you see, you are not neglecting Vaidhi Bhakti. You are following Vaidhi Bhakti. But this Vaidhi Bhakti is automatically being transformed into Raganuga Bhakti and opening up the gate for you to Vrindavan. Actually, that's the thing. I was just thinking about that, you know. Like, generally, other groups, even spiritual groups, you know, you will see there is a conflict between science and their faith. Because they can't, you know, they have to separate these two. Because faith is one thing, science is one thing. But when you are dealing with the absolute reality, then there cannot be any conflict. And that's why Krishna consciousness can be absolutely scientific. Because what is science? Science is the presentation of facts, isn't it? So if it is real, then whatever you present about it is real, factual. Therefore, and now mind you, what was Prabhupada was always emphasizing, Krishna consciousness is a science, it's not a faith. We may start off with faith, but actually it is a science. I mean, you as a scientist, I mean, you can see that yourself. Like, otherwise you wouldn't have been here.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes, Chandrasekhar.
On the same topic, Guruji, there's a purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada says, of all the instructions given by the spiritual master, the one to chant 16 rounds a day is the most important.
It's important just to maintain your spiritual standard. Why 16 rounds?
So that's
the basic.
To get love of God, then is
no, like not of all the instructions in the initial stage, that is the instruction that must be followed. But at an advanced stage, why 16 rounds? 24 hours a day.
The Prashant Prabhu's question was, you know, japa versus sankirtan, and you made the exposition.
So when you're chanting doesn't necessarily mean only japa. Chanting means singing the name of the Lord. Ultimately chanting, what is chanting? Congregational chanting. Isn't it chanting?
Yeah, definitely.
So you start off with 16 rounds, but you end with congregational chanting 24 hours a day, throughout your lifetime, life after life. That is the ultimate instruction of the spiritual master.
Just a follow-up question, Maharaj. The inherent principle here is that congregational chanting is benevolent to others.
Yeah.
But when you went home, you know, you talked about why we should chant japa loudly.
Yeah.
It's a form of benevolence to other people because they can hear the volume.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to just purely you're contrasting how the Gayatri is chanted, which is quietly. And I don't just assume chanting loudly was a benevolent act, so I tend to chant louder than anybody in the family. I was like, this matter.
The thing is that then again, you see, like, you know, chanting loud doesn't necessarily mean howling.
But I tell you what I mean. But silent.
Like, you know, ultimately, what is this chanting? The chanting is actually the expression of your love. You're calling out to the love, Lord. Now, when you call out to somebody with love, how do you call out? Right? When somebody who is calls out of love, even though he may call out loudly, you know, that gets a different expression. When the emotions of the heart is blended, then it becomes music. Music actually is an expression of emotion. So that's how the loud chanting takes the shape of music. And then your chanting is motivating others. Like your chanting, your expression of your love for the Lord is churning out the emotions of the hearts of others, and they are also joining you. And that is what Sankirtan is.
No, it's
nice.
I'm kind of slow. You were asking, is it possible to get love of God by chanting japa?
Yes.
So Guru's answer was yes or no.
By just chanting japa, no.
By just chanting japa. And that's where I don't understand, because Prabhupada said that if you just chant 16 rounds, you'll go back to Godhead. That means love of God. So that's sufficient in itself.
Yeah, that is just some initial instruction. But when you develop your love of Godhead, what's going to happen? Then? So? You start off with that, you know. You see, instructions, again, vary, you know, from step to step. Like, the instructions you receive in primary school doesn't remain the same, that doesn't remain forever. In high school it becomes, you know, different. Sometimes it even may appear to be contradictory. Like, for example, in lower geography, you learn that sun is static and the planets are moving around the sun. But in higher astronomy, you get to know that sun is also moving at a tremendous speed. But if you go in lower class, the sun is moving, the planets are moving, they won't be able to grasp it. So the spiritual master, the teacher, gives the instructions according to the ability of the individual to grasp.
But comment on this. Yeah. The other manifestation is, the point is that 16, if you chant 16 rounds purely, with pure devotion, then automatically the manifestation is. So if the observation is you just chant 16 rounds every day of your life,
right,
and you haven't developed a desire to do sankirtan, that means maybe you haven't chanted the rounds.
And the main thing is that the
you can chant 16 rounds of offenses every day of your life.
Well, that's the question. I remember Pankajangri Prabhu, or Brother Bhumarj in Mayapur, once he was telling us, he was saying, you know, the devotees may say what they want, that, you know, you got to chant purely, or this or that, but I have full faith that, you know, I just take that instruction as it is. Prabhupada guaranteed you just chant 16 rounds, all the four right, you'll go back to Godhead at the end.
Okay, fine. Then my question is, when you go back to Godhead, what are you going to do?
Kirtanya Sadahari.
So?
But like the fact is, you may chant impurely in this life and still go back to God, because Prabhupada guaranteed it. Because we may not chant.
Anyway, at least chant 16 rounds.
Can I say, I'm a bit slow as well. So if you chant japa in groups and you chant with love, but you can all hear each other, does that count as sankirtan or not?
You see, japa and kirtan, they're two things. Japa is, you see, deeper you go, more silent it will become. But kirtan is loud expression of your love for the Lord through calling out His names. So, you see, like one is more and more silent. Japa, the initial stage, or you can say the third class japa, is loud chanting. And that also, what kind of chanting? Loud means your lips are vibrating, but no sound coming out. Then the next one is hearing the sound inside yourself. The first one is called vachik. Some sound is coming out, vachik. You are hearing, lips are vibrating, right? And that is the sound that's coming out. And the second is upangshu. That is, you are hearing it inside, but you know your lips are closed. And then manasa, in your mind you are chanting. So upangshu is better than vachik. And manasa is better than upangshu. Manasa is the highest. That means more silent it is, better it is, deeper it is. Whereas kirtan is louder expression of the Lord's glorification in the form of music. And sankirtan, when many people get together and then they chant, that is sankirtan. Right? But then there is another concept of sankirtan, which Prabhupada actually demonstrated. That is engaging everything in glorification of Krishna. Therefore, in this sankirtan, what's the mridanga? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is calling the printing press the mridanga. Now, what's the link between a printing press and a mridanga? Does it look the same? Does it sound the same? No. But it is printing out the books that will go far away. And people will read them. And that is how the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is going to spread. And then Prabhupada came and gave an even bigger dimension to that. Right? Like, not only just printing books, but use everything. You know, diorama, you know, movies, and you know, like, use every possible means to glorify the Lord. Websites, internets, you know.
There's one burning question I had in lectures two, three days ago.
Yeah.
But there was one verse where you described the meditation in Krishna, and there were many various moods that you can meditate on. And you specifically talked about fear and kamsa, possible body getting angry. Yeah. There was one other type of mood. You talked about worshiping Krishna in delusion. So I wasn't too sure what worshiping Krishna in delusion means. And what's the manifestation in terms of, you give an example of having a body like kamsa. So what does delusion mean in the context of meditating on the Lord, and what's the outcome?
Yeah. The thing is, there are two types of attachments. One is out of, in a favorable disposition, and the other is through animosity. Like boiri bhav. Or you can say one is a negative one is a positive one. The benefit of the negative ones are not desirable, because the ultimate outcome of that is not desirable. So when one, say for example, one may develop, you know, intense animosity towards the Lord, and as a result of that he may be meditating upon the Lord. And as a result of that, he may be killed by the Lord. And being killed by the Lord, he may achieve, you know, liberation. But that liberation is not a desirable liberation. It's sajujya mukti. Whereas the positive ones will lead to servitorship, friendship, parental or conjugal.
You're talking about service
yeah.
in delusion.
And there was, because there was, you explained that very well. You talked about that what you just said with regard to fear, because that was a negative. And you talked about counselor. But there was one of the other things that was...
Delusion.
How can you worship Lord in the delusion?
Delusion in the sense, like, look at Jaya and Vijaya's situation. Like, they are devotees of the Lord. They wanted to serve Him. But they kind of desired some sort of service that couldn't be rendered in the spiritual sky. That means they had to develop animosity towards Krishna. So that is their delusion. They forgot their original relationship with Krishna and developed a negative attitude towards Him, animosity towards Him. That's the delusion. I mean, they had to become deluded in order to come to that situation. If they were in the proper senses, then they wouldn't have been able to behave the way they did. But ultimately, the Lord rewarded them. Like, they became Jaya and Vijaya, Jagaya and Madhai. And they got promoted to Krishna Lila, Navadip Lila in Vrindavan, which means from Navadip they will go into the Vrindavan Lila. Any other question? No question on this side. Swarna looks like in a deep thought.
I don't know if I have the right understanding, but I thought I remembered reading that Jaya and Vijaya were given the option of either taking 10 births as devotees or 3 births as demon because they were cursed. So either way they would have gone back. But I was just a bit confused. I was trying to harmonize that with what you were
saying. You see, Krishna is the cause of all causes, right? So whatever he does has a cause behind it, right? Now, Jaya and Vijaya, see how it started. They wanted to give Krishna the taste of chivalry, mellow of chivalry, right? That's one mellow he couldn't experience in Vaikuntha.
That was just their desire.
That was their desire. Okay. They felt that this, you know, this vairi bhav, the viraras, Krishna Narayan is not able to experience. So they felt that if we could give him that pleasure of relishing that mellow. And then, you know, that was just a seed of that happening. And then all these things started to happen. 4 Kumaras came, cursed them, and Krishna came out, apologized, and then Krishna said, well, they cursed you, so you have to go. But now you have a choice. 5 lifetimes or 3 lifetimes? Or no, 7 lifetimes or 3 lifetimes? If you remain my devotee, 7 lifetimes. If you become my enemy, 3 lifetimes. Now, does it fit in? What they wanted? If they wanted 7 lifetimes as a devotee, then that purpose that they desired wouldn't have been served.
So it wasn't because they wanted to go back earlier, it was because they wanted to fulfill the desire to give that type of pleasure.
That was one, and that cause is also there. Okay, let's just come back to you as soon as possible, even if we have to become your enemy. That's the apparent manifestation. But what is the root manifestation? What is the root cause? The root cause is that, you know, they wanted to give him that taste of the mellow. And in order to do that, of course, that time they didn't realize that in order to give them the mellow, taste of that mellow, they have to become enemies. Otherwise, how can you fight? Otherwise, the fight will be just a show. But when you fight as an enemy, then it's a real fight. So with Krishna, everything is real. So when Krishna fights, that fight also has to be real.
So is that cast as favourable intent? Like their intentions, is that cast as favourable? Like their intention to please Krishna was favourable, even though their actions...
Ultimately, you see, in the absolute consideration, there is no duality. Right? In the sense, this favourable, unfavourable, good, bad, they're all, you know, all these relative considerations are mundane. But in the spiritual realm, there is no question of duality. There, everything is absolute. Absolute means non-dual. Whatever is happening in relation to Krishna, that's also absolute. I mean, even the enemies are Krishna's devotees. And in a way, it can be seen as a drama on a stage. They're playing different roles, but they're not really that. Like hero and the villain, off the stage, you can say they have their arms around each other's shoulder and just talking to each other like great friends.
And does this apply to all the pastimes? Vrindavan pastimes? Are they absolute? Because there was a question, and I'm trying to remember what the nature of the question was. But we talked about that some of the pastimes only take place when Vrindavan manifested over here, we call it.
Right.
Those pastimes, do they have relative merit?
Because they're happening in the material realm, you know. It has a kind of a material touch to that, which is missing in the spiritual sky. Like, for example, in Golok Vrindavan, Krishna is never born. Krishna's childhood pastimes are not there because Krishna is not a child there. Krishna is Navakishore. In that Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't grow up. In that Vrindavan, the demons are not there. All those characters are not demoniac. They all are, you know, there in Golok, everything is in perfect spiritual harmony.
Because
killing of the demons are not there.
So it comes as the pastime of Krishna, it comes as manifestation away, it's not a spiritual pastime, it's not in Golok Vrindavan.
Yeah. The thing is, in Golok Vrindavan, there is a feeling of Kamsa there. But presence of Kamsa, as Kamsa, is not there. Okay. Like they feel, maybe Kamsa will come now. They have that kind of fear, just in order to churn out that emotion. But actually Kamsa never shows up. And
there... spiritual world. So I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So there's fear in the spiritual world.
It's a transcendental fear. You see, all these secondary mellows have to be there in order to experience certain emotions. Like those in there's five principal mellows and seven secondary mellows. Mm-hmm. You are aware of. Five principal mellows are neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental and conjugal. And seven secondary mellows are laughter, that makes you humor, surprise, chivalry, anger, fear, ghastly and pathos. So these are the seven secondary mellows. Now, to experience, all these mellows are there in Vrindavan. That's why Vrindavan is the topmost region of the spiritual sky. In Vaikuntha, these mellows are not there. Fear is not there in Vaikuntha. Ghastly is not there in Vrindavan. Anger is not there. You know, like, those mellows are not manifest in Vaikuntha. But in Vrindavan, they are. And that's why, now consider, if you are not afraid, then the joy of relief would be there. So in order to bring that sense of relief, the sense of fear must be there. So the fear is there, and then when you are relieved from that fear, then how do you feel? Right? But this, it's all done in a perfect harmony, with the ultimate, like it's there, the feeling of fear is there, just in order to give you the joy of relief. Like, and say for example, the father is playing with the child, and sometimes father throws the child up in the air. And how does the child feel?
Scared.
I mean, scared. But then the father catches him. Then both father and the child start to laugh. So that is kind of, you know, fear is there in Vrindavan in order to enhance the sense of relief and, you know, fear, the relief out of protection. And
so, do the devotees in Vrindavan in the spiritual world ever lament or want to be involved in the material world, Vrindavan's pastimes, because they don't get to experience Krishna growing up? Is that something they regret?
They don't regret, but they just remember. It's not, say for example, when you recall something from the past, or some sweet memory, do you regret? And another consideration is that we have to remember that there everyone is so absorbed with Krishna that there is no room for past and future. Everyone is completely obsessed with the present. Therefore, in the spiritual sky, there is no past or future. Like you are with Krishna, will your mind be attracted to or diverted to anything else? When it gets diverted, then you end up in the material nature.
One final question. So, given that, how is it that Jayambhijay could have the thought at some point to say, okay, we want Krishna to experience that? How could they come up with that thought?
That we won't be able to understand from here. When you go into the spiritual sky and that concept of time we are in, then probably we'll understand. Like, the other simple answer to that will be, there no one is planning himself. Everyone is acting according to Krishna's plan.
Okay.
Right?
Krishna wanted them.
Krishna wanted them, yeah. Yeah. But they are also feeling that, you know, their individuality is there, but that individuality again is predominated by Krishna, Krishna's will. I mean, you know, intellectually, from this plane, we cannot possibly grasp it. I mean, we may get a kind of a vague, you know, idea about it, but the real thing will be experienced only when we go back there. That's why Prabhupada used to give the example of, you know, trying to understand the ocean by the measurement of the well. A frog in the well. In relation to the whale, can he ever understand the dimension or the vastness of the ocean? I mean, he may think 3 times the whale, 4 times the whale, 20 million times the whale. Still, it don't match, because the concept of whale is the whale, right? Whereas the ocean is another dimension altogether. So from this dimension, this plane, we have to go into that plane to properly understand what it actually means. Hmm. Should he have some? Huh?
Just one question. Following on from what Rishi probably said, I read somewhere that when Krishna comes to this world, he brings the spiritual world with him. So, would that not answer? How does that work with what Rishi was saying?
Okay. Very good point. Very good. Krishna, in one hand, brings the spiritual sky with him, and at the same time, those who are qualifying from this plane, they get a chance to go there. You get it? Like, it's not just Krishna with the association of the spiritual sky is performing his pastimes. Krishna is allowing also the living entities from the conditioned souls from the material nature, those who have become qualified, also to take part here. Therefore, it has a kind of a material dimension to it, although it is spiritual. Is that clear? So should we have some kirtan?